Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Pensions Expert podcast. This week we will be talking about how the pensions regulator is concerned about Master Trust investment weakness, schemes being asked to send pension transfer warnings to members amid concerns that younger savers are trying to access their pensions, and how trustees are being called to take into account their sponsor affordability. I'm Maria Espedinger, Deputy Editor at Pensions Expert, and joining me are Pat Charman, Managing Director at CACEIS, and Greg McClymont, Director of Policy at the People's Pensions. Hi, Pat. Hi, Greg. Thank you for joining us. The first topic we're going to discuss is a story we wrote last week about mass trusts and how the investment strategies of some of these schemes are worrying the pensions regulator. Pat, I would start with you. What do you think do you think the regulator is right in having these concerns?
I don't think I can actually comment on the regulator's concerns themselves, Maria, but I think for me, good governance is the starting point and everything else stems from that. In my current role at CACEIS, we focus on providing governance solutions to pension schemes, which means delivering good quality data. And I think that is an element that maybe potentially the Master Trust can also look at more closely, is actually the good governance of the assets and the investments. And perhaps that's where the regulator is coming from.
Greg, can I take a view on this?
Yeah, I have a lot of sympathy with what Pat's just outlined. Governance is obviously critical. I mean, I guess it's the regulator's job to be concerned. So one expects regulators to be focusing on these kinds of issues, not least given how important investment returns are to delivering pensions. I'd probably add to Pat's observation about governance is that good governance is usually or most frequently seen in the context of scale in pensions. So I think the comments which were quoted around the regulator review, there was an emphasis on smaller master trusts. I think the gentleman concerned mentioned smaller and mid-size. I think it probably highlights or leads to a discussion about do we have enough scale yet in the master trust sector? And I would say when you look at the global comparisons, we still have far too many schemes.
Would you think that this kind of issue would not be as relevant if more consolidation happened in the master trust sector?
Well, there's no absolutes in anything, I suppose. I guess what I would say is master trust authorisation has been a very good thing. It's obviously brought down the number of funds out there significantly. But if you compare the UK to any of the leading pension systems around the world and beyond master trusts in DC more generally, and of course in DB, we're simply subscale. And scale, pensions isn't a cottage industry. Having scale does not mean that you will be running a high quality, well governed scheme per se, but it certainly increases the chances. And in the investment side, it gives you, more options for sure.
Pat, how could governance help this smaller pension schemes in your view?
Well, I think one of the challenges that smaller pension schemes have is they generally invest in funds. And because the UK pensions industry doesn't generally look through into the assets within those funds, they don't actually truly understand the risk and liquidity and actually, anything that's going on with those funds on a daily basis. But I do think, and I agree with Greg, that consolidation has got to be the way forward. And that's exactly what the Dutch did, many years ago. So they actually only have 180 DB schemes left in the Dutch market. So I think that's something the UK needs to look at.
Moving on to the next topic, which is again the regulator. TPR has issued guidance for schemes asking them to give pension transfer warnings to savers. I imagine this is more on the DB side of things, but Greg, how do you view this initiative?
It's in line, isn't it, Maria, with the direction of travel in recent months and in the last year in particular, in terms of a greater focus on the risks around DB transfers, beginning a while ago now, of course, with the high-profile case of the British steelworkers in Port Talbot, and then more generally with the FCA's analysis and digging into the advice that's been given on DB to DC transfers. So I'd see it as part of a general trend to towards, you know, greater risk warnings with respect to DB to DC transfers. The regulator on the FCA side is very clear, isn't it, that in most cases a transfer will not be in an individual's interest. Clearly, Pension Freedom, certainly in its first few years, you know, has seen a great interest in transfers, and the regulator's obviously concerned about that, and we have both regulators together here, you know, focused on the issue.
And what about, so there have been some disturbing announcements, if you can call it like that, that younger members before the age of 55, which is the age that, according to Pension Freedoms, they can cash out their pension, they've been trying to access their savings due to the current COVID-19 crisis. Is that something that we should be alarmed about? What do you think, Pat?
I'm a trustee for a very small DC trust-based scheme, and we actually haven't seen an increase in withdrawals or scans or any of the kind during this period. And I also checked in with our administrator, who confirmed that they hadn't seen an increase either. So, but what I do think is really important is that we've increased our focus on member communication. So we've actually sent specific communications to our members, asking them, you know, not to panic, not make any panic decisions. And actually, if they are thinking about withdrawing, then they actually be signposting them to the pension advisory / PensionWise, and also encouraging them to take financial advice. So personally, we're not seeing an increase, but we have taken the precaution and sent a specific communication to all members.
And Greg, working for a large master trust as the People's Pensions, is this something that you've been aware of? Have you been contacted by younger members? Are they concerned about this, their livelihood and trying to access their pensions?
Yes, I mean, we have had some examples of that. Certainly an increased interest relative to before COVID crisis hit. But you would expect that, wouldn't you, Maria? You know, there's lots of people in a very stressed financial situation, and it's entirely understandable and to be expected there'll be a greater interest. Not an overwhelming interest by any means, you know, an uptick, but not overwhelming. And of course, it does lead one into that. And I think the government's played a very skillful hand so far in terms of recognising that you can't solve the short-term problems of financial stress, or shouldn't solve them by increasing the long-term problems of an absence of reasonable retirement income. So trying to keep pension pots separate from the day-to-day is critical. All the evidence, again, from around the world is that pension systems where early access is allowed, the money is never repaid. The US system, the biggest system in the world, is the perfect example of that. In the USDC system, the 401k, of the money taken out for various reasons in the US, the vast majority of that money is never replenished.
What can pension schemes do? As Pat was saying, you signposting them to guidance service available. Is there anything else that pension schemes can do to help these members?
Yeah, I mean, clearly for those under the age of 55, you know, their options in the pensions sense are, you know, are very narrow. You know, you can't get to the money, and then it's a question, I think, of individuals looking at the Money Advice Service, looking at other places to get, you know, Citizens Advice Bureau and the like. But I mean, we know the big thing is the massive increase in enrollment, you know, attempted enrollment for universal credit and the benefit system, and then of course the thing which the government has done, which has been very effective, is the job retention scheme. I mean, that has worked. The loan schemes haven't worked so far, although the bounce back scheme for very small businesses, I think, is the potential. But the loan schemes generally haven't had a great impact. But the job retention scheme has had an enormous impact. And actually, policy needs to be at that macro level in terms of this crisis. You know, pension scheme access is not going to be anywhere near, you know, the magnitude of the problem.
And Greg, would you agree that we need to do more as an industry to educate members? And I think, you know, the PLSA's initiative on retirement living standards is a good one, but I think we need to take it a step further.
I'm always a bit on the sceptical side on the education stuff, Pat, insofar as, you know, for lots of people in this instance, they have a legitimate need, you know, to reduce their financial stress, which I know you're very well aware of. And I'm not sure education is going to change that mindset a lot. Longer term, anything that can be done to make people more familiar with their options and pensions is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I'd probably place that alongside and underneath, Pat, your initial emphasis on governance.
Yeah.
Pensions are so complicated and there's so many options.
Yeah.
And that what's really needed is experts, inverted commas, who people can trust to manage their money and their interests in an efficient way. And like you pointed out right at the beginning, that should be the focus. And education is always something we should aspire to, but we should, I think, be aware of, you know, the history of educational initiatives having an impact on a mass basis on how people think about pensions is pretty limited.
But how do we get people to trust us? Because, you know, I'm a trustee and, you know, my 100% focus is ensuring the best possible retirement income I can. And there's a lot like me. So how do we get the general public to trust pensions? I think that to me is the huge challenge alongside education. But
yeah, you're right. And it takes you to ownership, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So we might say the answer is a sense of ownership. But of course, that then leads you back a bit into your observation about, you know, how do you get people to, you know, to be aware of and be interested in it? I think asking for trust is quite a high bar, because
yeah.
trust in all kinds of institutions is pretty low and declining. My view would be, I would go back actually again to governance and say the starting point. You mm-hmm. know, people aren't stupid; they understand when an institution is working in their interests, or they feel it's working in their interests rather than in someone else's. And I think that takes you back to governance and trying to take out those conflicts of interest as far as possible. And the UK historically has not been great at that. You know,
no.
If you compare it to the Dutch or the Australians yeah. or the Scandinavians, you know, we don't have a pension, an occupational pension system, which starts and ends with trustee-based pensions. We have the, you know, the individual retail side as well.
Yeah.
I think that's always going to make things trickier.
Yeah, agreed.
One of the last topics for discussion is TPR's annual funding statement, where they have directed their defined benefit trustees to focus on the affordability of payments into their schemes by their sponsor employers. And they also urged collaboration between the two parties. Greg, do you think this is a sensible approach from the regulator?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's feeling around, aren't they, Maria, for the right way to try and balance competing interests. If we take it at the very highest level, you know, one can't have DB schemes that can meet their obligations unless their sponsors are, you know, surviving and indeed thriving. The challenge, of course, is to separate out, you know, sponsoring of schemes who are genuinely struggling versus those who might actually be continuing to operate successfully and who can meet their, you know, their obligations and in terms of closing the funding deficit, you know, without any change to the, you know, to the timetable. So it gets very granular very quickly. But at the broadest level, the balance is always hard to strike. I mean, it's a big challenge with covenant, you know, covenant issues in DB, as it's pretty complex, isn't it?
I think just one thing I'd add to what Greg's just said is I think there will be much more focus on value for money and much more focus on costs. There, I mean, we have seen that there are plans for DB schemes to have to undertake value for money assessments in a similar way that DC have to today. And I think there'll be far more pressure on trustees of DB schemes to actually undertake full cost analysis. We know that there's approximately 30% of costs which are not even collected or reported in respect of pension schemes in general. So I think that we will definitely see a drive to look at costs in much more detail and assess value for money for members. And that obviously will then impact the sponsor of those DB pension schemes.
Thanks for that, Pat. At the end of the podcast, we have a section which you call Always a Pensions Angle, which is a story that at first hand is not related to pensions, but ends up having a pensions connection. So I'll leave it to you, Greg, to bring us our story this week.
Yeah, thanks, Maria. I've thought in the context of VE Day, you know, coming upon us very quickly. Interesting to think about the Beveridge Report, which we know had such an enormous impact in shaping the post-war welfare state. But thinking of it in the context of, you know, an enormously successful piece of work with huge beneficial impact for society, but in the context of how things change and how policies have to be updated, you know, for a shifting society. So just take the example of Beveridge was predicated on the notion, the whole approach of a family where the male went out to work and the female stayed at home and looked after the children. It was a one breadwinner model. And it had a huge impact on the pension system because it really helps explain why the UK approach at the state pension level, at least, has always been about contribution, and contribution being defined by going out to work and being in the workplace. And we know, of course, now that if we think about the gender pensions gap, you know, that the fundamental issue there, when you strip away all the other issues, is how do we recognise the contribution to society which is made by those, usually women still, who stay at home or aren't in the traditional workplace and are bringing up children and caring for older family relatives and the like. And I think when we think about Beveridge, you know, a huge social revolution for the good, but we have to think in a pension sense of how do we update that vision to reflect a changed society with much more fluid patterns of working and a recognition that, you know, there needs to be, you know, equality for men and women in pensions. And I think if we take it in that direction, it leads us really into that question of how can the state pension or auto-enrolment system be made to recognise the contribution of those who are doing unpaid work.
Very interesting point. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Greg. And tune in next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.